You are joining the Happy House Hunters. This is our mastermind group, and we have quite an extensive group these days, but because this call is at 2 o'clock on a Monday, it's often hard for folks to tap in. And of course, today's a holiday. So Todd, thank you for being here on a holiday. And no Tammy problem. And David, thanks for tapping in. It's always much easier to talk when we have an audience. This is being recorded and we will put it in our mastermind replay section. And then the rest of the group will tap in later in the week when they get a minute and listen, because everyone told me this is a topic that they wanted to hear about. I'll give a little bit of background for Todd, and then I'm going to turn it over to Todd for a moment. But our background is that this group is mostly, I'll say, newbies getting into real estate investing. A lot of the folks are still working full-time jobs. Some are right at the edge of making the jump from a day job over to their dream job of just managing real estate and using their real estate buy and holds as their income. So they would have, anywhere from, well, we've got some in the group that just have one piece of investment real estate so far, all the way up to maybe 30 doors, which is still considered a small investor in the scheme of things. And of course, as we're building our real estate business, it's always good to get some good sound practices in at the beginning so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel once you realize that something's not working and you're kind of buried in the paperwork. And now you're thinking, oh, now I need to go back and create something to make this more manageable. So, and oftentimes when it comes to real estate, it is the paperwork. It is the bookkeeping. It is keeping track of those expenses and how you're going to get those from your expense ledger over into your tax return. And that just gets so confusing for a lot of folks. And then when or when not to send out a 1099, which is the big question I've had this month from several folks out of the mastermind. They've contacted me directly and they've said, okay, now here's what I have. Who do I have to send a 1099 to? How do I get the forms? Where do I do this? How do I? And I'm like, you know what? There are folks that can do that for you. but again, if you're on a shoestring budget and you're trying to get some things done for yourself, you just need to know who to send a 1099 form out to, which form to send, how do you then send that on to the IRS? And then just what counts in your bookkeeping that what you can use as a tax deduction. So anyway, we have Todd with us today. And he is with Southern Tier Bookkeeping Services. And I saw him on another Facebook group and asked him to come on today and maybe help us with some of our questions and answers here. And I'm going to let Todd tell you a little bit about his background. Todd, I'd love to hear your backstory as to how you even ended up doing bookkeeping. So tell us about that.
Sure. I guess that's always a good place to start, isn't it? So I actually started my career with the YMCA running summer camps across the United States and had a great time with it and did that for about 20 years working in camping, whether it was with the Y or just private run camps. And as I got older and had children and wife and got married, then had children, it wasn't a good fit for my family for multiple reasons. And so I started looking for different things and found a job in Columbus, and my family had originally been there. And so that's how I got to Columbus. And after a year of working with that company, they decided they hired a full-time general manager a little too early. So I was out of a job and starting to look. But we got to Columbus. It was a good fit for my family, so we didn't want to move. My wife was doing well with her two businesses, and I started doing the books for her. And really enjoyed doing that, and had some bookkeeping responsibilities at past jobs, and enjoyed doing that, and really wanted to help businesses so that they wouldn't get into the situation that they were in with me, which was, hey, we brought this guy on and now we can't afford him, and had that person, that business, paid a closer attention to their books and some projections, they would have realized it wasn't going to happen. I knew I was in trouble 6 months after being on the job when I was doing the budget for the next year. So started taking some classes and that's where it started. And was doing some other bookkeeping on the side. I did it for my kids PTA and really enjoyed it. So it just seemed to fit. And then the helping the businesses kind of helped with that with my YMCA of, you know, helping people help kids grow and helping businesses grow. And so that's how I got started in it. And just like anything, just like real estate, you find your deals or your clients by talking to people you know. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who really on paper would never have needed a bookkeeper. And I was just catching up with him. At the time we were renting, and he was actually out helping my landlord do some work. So we were sitting on the back porch catching up, and he said what he was doing. And I said what I was doing. And he said, you ought to reach out to my partner because he handles all the books and stuff, and we're looking for a new bookkeeper. And then that's how I got into real estate, doing books for real estate, and kind of exploded from there, if you will. Most of my clients come from word of mouth, so that means that you're doing something right when all your clients are coming from word of mouth. It's been a good chunk of change last year advertising on the internet, and didn't get anybody, but all my clients came from word of mouth, so that is something that I'm very happy with. Took care of their books very well, and they started recommending out. And the classes I took with bookkeeping, they said you wanted to niche into a field, and there was a lot, and I spent a lot of time trying to niche into landscaping and pools because I had some background with those and thought it would be enjoyable to do. And then as I was spending a lot of time on that, I kept adding real estate clients. And then realized that my niche had really found me, and I needed to stop working so hard to find a niche. So that's how I got to where I am. The group that Kathy and I try to add value to those groups, and I try very hard not to sell my services in there. And Kathy had posted about 1099. And it is a busy time. It's a lot of work. And 1099s can be confusing. So that's why I posted that decision tree, if you will, in that group, because it helps out. The one part it doesn't talk about, Kathy, is I realized I need to update it, is if you pay interest to anybody $10 or more, then you need to send out a 1099 also. It's not just that most of us think that it's service industry, you know, the guys or the companies, the people, I should say, that come in and paint or put in new cabinets, but it's also if you're paying back a hard money lender and you're you pay $11 in interest to them, then you should be sending out a 1099 also. So anyways, that's that backstory on where and how I got to where I am and what I'm doing.
Wonderful. That's very interesting on you know, the process and how you said that your niche found you instead of you finding it. We just had this conversation earlier today. I have another group called Building a Better Business, and I keep telling them that their client base and their tribe will find them, and that their calling will find them, that they don't have to search that hard to find you know, basically their niche. So I love that it found you. If you had a brand new client, you know, let's say that I called you up and I said, okay, I'm as you can see in my little square here, I am a passive income coach. So I want to instill in all of our members to create a system and put systems in place, whether it be independent contractors or employees or partners or however they develop their systems, or whether it's all software and hardware, but to put systems in place where they work less and it becomes a passive income stream of income for them, so that they can have their freestyle life, whatever that means to them. Maybe they want to travel more. Maybe they, you know, want to lie on the beach more, whatever it is that they want to do, spend time with family more, go to Cancun more, whatever it is that they want to do, so that they're not thinking, I can't go because taxes are due. I can't go because rents are coming in. I can't go because I'm behind on my bookkeeping. And so I encourage them all to create more of a passive income stream and to systematize, if you will, everything that they're doing. So if I were a brand new, inquiry of yours, what kind of questions would you ask me before you could bring me on as a client?
Sure. So one of a couple different questions, and one that I start off with is, why are you looking for a bookkeeper? Because that's the big part of it. And what are you doing for your books right now. I obviously have I have bookkeeping systems in place, and it's so true. And I've found that even the systems you put into place that first year you're in business, usually a year later, 2 years later, you're looking at them and going, why did I do that way? Because you're always trying to improve your systems and get them better. But the first questions I ask are why are you looking for a bookkeeper? Because that really tells me what they're looking for. If they're looking for an employee that's going to, you know, respond, you know, that's the hard part is I do run a business and I have other clients. So to help to make sure that they're going to be able to fit into my systems just as well as I can fit into theirs is important because, you know, also to understand that we're working together. Bookkeeping isn't something that you just hand off to somebody and then you don't ever respond back. Especially, you know, if you're a buy and hold person, that's a lot easier for me to take care of your books because there's a lot less questions. If you're flipping houses and depending on how detail oriented you want those reports, I mean, Lowe's receipts say Lowe's on, but they don't have addresses on them. So that to help figure that part out. And then the software that they're currently using. I don't work in Excel. I don't work in Excel or Google Sheets spreadsheets. That doesn't work for me. You know, so we got to get to an accounting software program that's going to work.
So if you had to recommend an accounting software program, what would be your go-to choice?
Sure. I like QuickBooks. I like it. I know it's not, there's no software out there that solves everybody's challenges 100%, but I'm well-versed in QuickBooks and can really get it to work well for people. So that would be the one that I would start. That would be the one that I would recommend if we're going to do bookkeeping. If you're to the point where you're like, I know I need a software, but I just can't afford QuickBooks because I know QuickBooks does have, that can be pretty pricey. Wave Accounting is a free software. It at least will do your transactions and get you a P&L and a balance sheet. And it does have some other reports on there that you can at least handle. If you're going to DIY and do it yourself, then that's what I would recommend because you can reconcile your accounts, which is important. And then you can hand off a P&L or an income statement, same thing to your accountant. And then you can have a balance sheet also. So those are the two that I recommend. I know that there's rent software out there that can also do it, but they're more wanting to, my experience with them is that they're very, they're trying to get that tenant portal to going. So you can collect money and rent that way, and that works. And then putting reports together. The most important thing with any accounting software that you use, whether it's a rent management software or a QuickBooks or a Wave Accounting or Xero, is that you're able to reconcile those accounts all your bank accounts at the end of the month. And we were all taught to do that when we were going through high school and elementary, you know, middle school. And I would be willing to bet most of us don't reconcile our checking account every month. But the reason that you want to do that for your business is to make sure that you have all those expenses and income in there. And if you're going to a CPA to do your accounts, your taxes at the end of the year, they probably aren't going to want to touch your books unless they're clean and reconciled. That should be the first thing that they're doing. And what reconciling does is it makes sure that every transaction that happened at the bank is in your books and that you're not decreasing your income so you pay less taxes and increasing your expenses. So that's why you want to be able to reconcile those. And that's why I won't work with an Excel because it's so much harder to reconcile your stuff. So that's what you really want to look at when you're looking at accounting. The reports, obviously ease of use, and then that you can reconcile.
Good point. I try to have a paperless office as much as possible. And so one of the things that I did early on is I created or I opened a bank account for each individual property because where I was headed at the very beginning was I was going to have each property in its own LLC to help limit the liability. And so I wanted the bank account to go with the property. I wanted the insurance to go with the property. So some insurance companies, and see there, it just bumped me off. So good. Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, we can still see you on the original one.
Okay, it bumped me. Yep, there we go. It bumped me off for a minute. So that's why I've got two actual devices connected. Anyway, I have an individual bank account for each one because that's where I was headed, was toward an LLC and property taxes. And then everything was done inside that one account. So all of the income coming in and all of the expenses going out stayed just within that account. And it made it nice and clean. And then at the end of the year, the bank that I was using actually had a little report system, kind of their own little QuickBooks version. And I could actually develop and click on different report options, and it would even tally up all of my totals, like all of the total insurance that I paid and the total taxes I paid. And those numbers, then I could just move over to my Schedule E, and it just made everything so much easier. What is the flaw in my system doing it that way? And that's how I'm still doing my bookkeeping. I'm not using QuickBooks or Way of Accounting or any program like that. I'm letting my bank account kind of handle my accounting and reconcile my accounts that way. And that seems to work for me. But as I get bigger and busier, is there a better option if at some point I want to hand that off to a bookkeeper to have more passive income and not have to sit and do any of that myself?
Sure. So I would say that the reason that would be challenging if you were to hire me is because I'm not going to know your bank and how it's set up. And the reason that I like my client to move over to Wave, really to QuickBooks, is because just like you, it's where my expertise lies. And so it's going to be quicker for me to be able to take care of your books that month and throughout the year. The other challenge, and I obviously don't know that, but the one thing that would concern me is to make sure that if you're going to hire a bookkeeper and you're doing it in your bank account, are there safeguards in place to make sure that I'm not going to be able to spend your money?
Right.
And QuickBooks does that. A lot of banks have you only access, and that would be the question that I would ask your bank is, your system's great. I want to give my bookkeeper or my accountant access. Can they do that? Chase is outstanding for that. They do that. Huntington will do that, but they charge you $7 a month to be able to do that. So that's not a bank that I'm going to recommend for people.
I get it.
There's a new bank that I've just started using for my business. My wife also has two businesses of her own, so I obviously do her books. So when I recommend something, it's because we use it. The new bank that we've started using is called Relay Bank. And the reason I like it is because, one, it's online. So I know right off the bat, some people are like, nope, I got to see my bank. My wife was it was very challenging for my wife to switch over to it. I don't like going to banks. I think you get lost in the shuffle and you lose half your day going. Relay Bank, you can open your accounts online. You open one master account, and then you can open up as many accounts as you want after that, up to like 25 accounts. So if you do the profit first system, it's very profit first friendly. It's very friendly to real estate flippers because you can have all that money in one account. You can name it that, you know, I'm doing, say, if you're doing five flips, you can have those addresses in there, name those accounts, and you can have all that money and expenses coming and going. You could do the same thing for you, even if you were buy and hold, you could do the same thing if you wanted to track it there. It of course syncs up with QuickBooks, and you can reconcile your accounts that way. So back to your original question, that's what would concern me about your system is, can you protect yourself as the individual to make sure that your money is going to still be there when you want it to be there? And you can all say, I trust my bookkeeper 100%. I trust my CPA, but every day you can go on and you can Google how somebody lost, you know, serious money. And so if you have that protection in place, that's what I would say would be the biggest concern of that is, are they going to be able to see what you want them to see with the protections in place?
Good point. And my question in that is, if I have, let's say, 10 properties with 10 different accounts, how could I connect that with a QuickBooks? Does QuickBooks only connect one account, or does it connect more than one?
Say that question again for me, Kathy.
I have, let's say, as an example, let's say I have 10 separate bank accounts and each one is for a separate property. How do I connect that to QuickBooks? Does QuickBooks want everything in a master account and then I divide it accounting wise, or will more than one account connect with the QuickBooks?
You can put in as many accounts as you bank accounts as you want. QuickBooks has, so the way QuickBooks has it is that they have, it doesn't matter whether it's account. So they count accounts as bank accounts, credit card accounts, expenses. You know, if you have one for repairs and maintenance, your income account. So, and each subscription level has a number, and it's about 250. So I have yet run into a client that's using all 250 at the same time. I have had clients that they've gotten the 250. And so we've just gone back through and closed out some of those accounts so that we can reuse them. So to answer your question, yes, if you have, like I have for my business right now, for my little itty bitty business, I have 7 bank accounts. They all come in right now. I use the profit first model. So that's why I have all those accounts and they all come in and QuickBooks works with that. What QuickBooks is not set up for is to run multiple businesses, multiple EIN numbers through one subscription.
Okay.
There are ways to get around. I mean, there are ways, just like anything, there's hacks to get around that. But that's going to depend on your CPA, because I've had clients that have done that. And when the CPA looks at their books and says, we're finishing off this year, and next year you're opening up two accounts, because it's, to them, it's not a clean set of books. So I've seen clients that have had 5 businesses run through one subscription, and it's a pain. I'm not gonna lie, it's a pain. It takes more work, but it's just not, and it's not as clean. So the CPA doesn't like it. I blame them. I don't like it either.
Yeah, I can see that, because again, at tax time, you know, you're gonna file, if you have different businesses with different EINs, you're gonna file different Schedule Cs, and so I would think that each business entity should have its own account, its own QuickBooks account, I would
right.
think.
You're exactly right, Kathy, and that's the way that QuickBooks is set up, that you have each EIN number has its own subscription. Yes. They have it set up. I mean, obviously QuickBooks is out there to make money, so it helps their bottom line too, but it's going to help yours also, because you're going to have less chances for mistakes, because you have all those expenses and all that income coming into one set of books.
Great. That's perfect. That answers my question, and I can see it clearly. I'm going to jump over to Tammy. She made a comment. She said, I tried your way, but I wanted more reporting, a dashboard to show performance of our portfolio. Tammy, are you using QuickBooks right now? And you're on mute there.
I was just using my bank accounts, but then I felt like I could obviously do the income and expense reports, but I couldn't really get a good sense of how we were doing overall with our business. So I wanted something that had more robust reporting. So I started using Stessa, which is a free online accounting program designed specifically for real estate. And it has a really nice dashboard and a lot of good reports. It's very similar to QuickBooks. I actually have a history. I was a staff accountant prior to retiring, so I have a experience with bookkeeping. I know QuickBooks. I've heard that it's a little challenging to bend it to work properly for real estate. And since we just got started and only have 3 properties, I was looking for an inexpensive, quick solution.
What was the name of this again, Tammy?
Stessa. It's assets spelled backwards. So it's stessa.com.
Ah, thanks. Yeah. And Todd, do you have any opinion on Stessa? Are you familiar with it at all?
I don't have any clients that you currently use that right now. I have one that uses RentTech and then one that's using Buildium. And I learn new software as it becomes of, you know, as my clients need me to learn it. I have heard of that. I know that it's out there. It's been recommended in a lot of the bigger pockets, forums of an option, but that's as far as that I know that it goes.
Now for me, I do all of my, rent income through a program called Inago, which is very similar to Cozy and Buildium. And it's just another platform, but it's almost identical to Cozy and Buildium. Buildium handles more units. It's more for the smaller, Inago is more for the smaller investor. And I use that, but I've not put my accounting over there. And so Tammy, have you looked at the accounting piece inside of Inago? And does it not do what you need it to do? Or have you checked on that?
I have. I tried it for all of last year, and you have to manually enter everything. So it's okay. Kind of a pain in the butt. And it doesn't let you split transactions easily. I mean, you have to do a lot of manual. You have to pretty much put in, if you have a transaction that's for multiple units, you have to do the math yourself and split it out. I talked to Dave at Inago while we were at the
big Cincinnati conference.
OREA conference. And he said they've been working on getting Inago more automated so that you will be able to connect it to your account or to your bank accounts and your checking, your credit cards, and actually just import transactions and code them.
Good to know before I get, you know, way in over my head going with some sort of an accounting system and then realize that my Inago, it was right around the corner. So anyway, I'm at that place where I'm wanting to travel more. That's, of course, my freestyle living is to be able to travel more. And so I'm looking at where I want to go next, what the next best step is for me. So Tammy and David, do you have any questions for Todd? You're on mute there.
I know.
Oh, there you go.
With the computer. Oh, something in your email talking about this meetup sounded really promising and like it was going to be interesting. And we might need to look back there because I know there is things we wanted to hear more about.
Well, one of the things I mentioned in the announcement was 1099s, when to send one and when not to send one. And Todd actually has a nice little graphic to show all of that. And I can post that. He sent me a copy of it, the link to it, and I can post that when I do the replay. I don't have it right in front of me. Todd, do you have it where if you shared a screen, you could show it?
Yeah, give me a minute here and I'll get to it. I know right where it is on my computer.
Okay. I found it very, very interesting when I saw the graphic. It was just like a flow chart, and it was so easy to read. And that was the one thing that I had mentioned in the announcement, because there's just times when I question, do I need to send a 1099? And if so, which one? And that sort of thing.
So what do I do if I've asked someone for their W-9 half a dozen times and they haven't provided one? But I've obviously paid them more than $600.
You know, Tammy, that's an awesome question. I have not researched this because I haven't run into that problem. What I have heard through different forums is that there's a spot where you can mark did not send, you know, the EIN or the social security number, basically what you're labeling them as a pain in the butt. And that's what you're letting the IRS know is I've done my part. I can't do any more. And that's it. And some of it starts with saying to that person, that business, hey, listen, I have to submit this anyways, whether you give me your numbers or not, I'm still sending it. And be honest, because, and then follow it up with, I'm not going to take the fine of whatever, you know, whether it's, I can't remember, 100, it's some oddball amount, like 187 or what. I'm not paying the 187 for not turning it in. And then the other part of that is to let them know that you won't be doing business with them anymore because it's not worth the hassle, which I'm sure you guys have already come to that conclusion that you're not going to do business with them. But that's the two things that I've known, but I have not done any research on that yet because I haven't had that problem with my clients. They've all gotten to that point. Last year I got behind the eight ball on getting 1099s out, and I promised myself I would never get in that case again. So my clients probably, they hate 1099s because they hear from me so much about them. I send out constant 3 notices a year to make sure they're staying up on it. And then when they bring a new, when they start paying a new client and I have to type the name into QuickBooks, I usually say, hey, do you have a W-9 on these guys? Cause they're not in QuickBooks. So,
I'll interject here. I had a couple early on when I, was first starting to do rental properties and buy and holds. And I had a couple that I didn't have their social security number or EIN number or whatever on a W-9. And so like Todd said, I went ahead and submitted my 1099. And how you wait that reasonable amount of time, whatever that is. And the IRS will tell you, you've overpaid here, or you've underpaid there, or they'll send you whatever they think your adjustment should be on something maybe you missed. And I actually got a letter from the IRS that said, we noticed that you did not include this vendor's EIN or social security number. Therefore, if you use them in the future, you have to withhold 15% of taxes if they're going to refuse to give you their number. And then they can file to claim it to get it back.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
And so I knew that was.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting.
Kathy, I'm going to share my screen. I did find it. So.
Perfect. Is this not the greatest graphic? Look at this.
The only thing that I. So the royalties part is really that I should change that to be royalties and interest. So that's the only part that I probably need to update for next year. But as you guys know, you're always updating. And it just goes through. I'd love to take credit for this. But like anything, I borrowed it from the internet because I thought it was so helpful. And this is what I send out to my clients throughout the year. But you can kind of work your way down there and figure out. If you need to send one out, this section, this box right here of paid by PayPal or credit card, that box I probably should make a little more generic because they're constantly changing. The trick with the PayPal here is that it needs to be a business account on your end. So if you're using Venmo or PayPal, my understanding is if you're using, like if I was paying you guys and I was using my personal one, Todd Lennig, then it's not going to send that 1099 out. It's only going to be sending it out if I was using one created by Southern Tier with my stuff in there. I've also heard through discussion through different forums that I'm a part of, we'll just send everybody one. Well, you don't want to just send everybody one. You really want to reach out because what you're going to do, they're going to stop wanting to do business with you is if they're an S Corp and they don't want one because now they're going to get taxed double. So like for me personally, my businesses are S Corps. If you send one to me, I'm not going to be really happy with you because now I'm paying more money on taxes.
I understand that. And so I learned that as well early on in my buy and hold business is that if they were incorporated in any fashion. However, what if they're an LLC? Do they still get a 1099 if they're an LLC? Is that considered a incorporated or is that because it's a limited liability company?
Great question. So an LLC is a legal term. So you're doing that for legal protection. The tax part of it is if you're an S corp or a C corp, you're just a straight corporation or you're an S corporation. So you can be an LLC and still need one, or okay. You can be an LLC S corp, which is what I am. And then you don't need one. And so you really need to ask those questions. And more than likely the person that you're asking isn't going to know. So they're going to need to go to their tax preparer and say, hey, do I need this? But that's a great question, Kathy.
So why do you say they would be double taxed if you issue them a 1099 and they're an S corp?
Because then you're saying, because I would have to claim, so you're sending that money to the government saying, hey, Todd at Southern Tier, we paid them this amount. And then I'm also going to put on my tax return how much money I made. So it's going to be reported twice.
I thought that you would just hold on to it and not really even care because you're going to file your taxes and base your taxes on your own bookkeeping and not necessarily on the 1099s you received.
The 1099s are, so when 1099s are sent off, so I just sent I did the clients today. They go to the people that he sent to, and then they're also filed with the government at the touch of a button. They go two different places. So the IRS would have that copy of those 1099s. So let's say they, for example, with this client, say that he wanted to send one to me for $600. So when he sent that one to me, I would get that 1099, but a copy of that would then go to the government saying that there was $600 was spent. And so that's why you want to make sure that that's where that double would be, because that $600 would also be on my P&L. And how I just
thought that the government had those for informational purposes and they used all the 1099s they received to make sure that you as Southern Tier were claiming enough income, but I didn't think that they would tax you in addition to your tax report unless you way underreported your income.
I think in theory they're comparing the two. Now obviously that's in theory, and I don't know if it works on everyone or spot check, but that's my understanding of it.
Okay. I just wondered. I hadn't heard that you would be double taxed. So
yeah,
my best guess would be what would happen is that as a business, you would claim, you know, what you had on your books as your income. And then once this 1096 went out to the IRS saying that someone had sent you a 1099, the IRS might consider that a discrepancy and you'd have to somehow prove it at the other end that you'd already claimed that income. So there might be a step in there where you could clear it up, but I could see where any type of a corporation would be aggravated by that because that's more work for them to even have to clear that up with the IRS.
Right.
I get that. But this is a great chart. I love it. Yeah, I kind of followed all of the flow chart. I followed everything all the way around, you know, every one of them. And I thought, yes, this is definitely self-explanatory. It really helps. Now, if it's okay with you, Todd, I'd like to go ahead and post this actually in with our mastermind with this replay of this video. And I will, of course, leave you right there at the bottom so folks can see where it came from. And if that way, if they want to connect with you, they can do that.
Yes, you most definitely can.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I do. Sure. So for 1099s, if I'm sending them to contractors, I need to send a 1099 NEC now, right? Not an MISC.
Correct. And that would change for the 2021 tax year. So, but yes, you're correct, Tammy.
Okay. That's what I had thought. But then I got an email from my accountant that said, if you're requesting forms from the IRS, make sure you get the 1099 MISC form, MIS forms. And I thought they had been changed to NEC.
They have been. He might be recycling his emails like we all do this time of year because we send them out one time a year.
Yeah, I understood it to be the NEC as well. So, yep, I think we're all correct there.
Okay.
And you can obviously get those forms off of Amazon or Office Depot, wherever you buy your stuff. The IRS, I've been told, will send them to you for free, but I would recommend going somewhere where it's going to be a little quicker for you.
They do. It takes 10 business days to send them, and they're still a little old-fashioned, so they send the three-part form to you that, you know, you need a dot matrix printer to print on. So I did request some last year and this year.
Now, is there a way that we can, there's all kinds of online stuff. Is there a way we can go online and do our 1099s totally separate from actually doing our taxes?
You can. There's definitely sites out there that you can use that you can put in all the information that will either give you the option to mail or email them out. I would recommend you research them on your own to figure out which ones work best for you and your in your search. Some of them will, you can also pay a monthly or a fee that when you work with a new contractor, you can just send them the email and they'll fill out their W-9 stuff and then it's all gathered for you. But obviously that's another expense for you.
Right.
I'm a big believer that you hold the W-9 in one hand and the check in the other and give it to them. And then when they give you that back, then you switch. And that's how you get them. That's what I recommend to all my clients. Because once you give them the check, then there's no, they have no incentive to give that to you, especially if they didn't enjoy working with you for whatever reason, they're done. So.
Yeah, I get that. And I did finally go to that. I had independent contractors that worked for me in the salon industry. All of my stylists were actually independent contractors. And so it was part of their sign-on package. They had to complete the W-9 before they even got their key to the buildings. and I did that on purpose because, again, once they started working, they didn't understand it. They thought, even though they were self-employed and they were just renting a salon space from me, like a booth rent space, they thought that I was supposed to 1099 them at the end of the year. And I said, I have no idea what your income is. Your customers are paying you direct. You're just renting a space from me and you're going to 1099 me on the rent that you paid. I said, sure. I'm not going to 1099 you. I said, I have no idea how much money you made this year. You're self-employed. And for some reason, those salon girls couldn't quite wrap their mind around that. They thought that they were an employee somehow and that I'm supposed to 1099 them on how much money they made. So yes, that was always in conflict every year with the salon girls because they didn't quite understand it. They did great hair, though.
Well, it's a different side. I mean, it's a different side of your brain that you work. And that's, you know, when I have, Kathy, you asked about when I talk to bookkeeping clients, you know, that's one of the reasons, you know, what people will say, when do I need a bookkeeper? Well, the answer depends across the board. One is if your brain, for whatever reason, isn't wired so you can think numbers, then you need to get a bookkeeper and you should do that as soon as you can afford one. One of my wife does all artistic stuff. She doesn't talk to that side of the brain very often. So it's very difficult for her to do bookkeeping. So she needs a bookkeeper right off the bat. But if you, the next thing is when it's starting to cost you. Well, what does that mean? Well, when it's costing you money because you can't get out quote jobs, when it's costing you time with your family, or when you can't go to Cancun because you have to stay back to do your books. Well, that's a bad choice. I mean, that really is. But that's when you should be getting a bookkeeper.
So what can we expect as far as fees? What type of a budget do we need to have?
That's a great question. And it's one that I see in bigger pockets all the time. I put my fees are based on, I do monthly packages. So you get a flat fee for the month and it takes care of your books and you know what to expect. But that is based on how big your business is and in number of factors, transactions, loans, you know, accounts that goes into that equation on what the price is. I like monthly plans. I did some, when I first started, I did some hourly stuff for clients that were small and it's a pain in the butt. I don't do that anymore. I don't like the clocking in and the clocking out. I work from home. I have two kids. I was always worried that I was cheating somebody, either myself or them, because of interaction, the phone ringing, the kids coming and stuff like that. So the answer depends, Kathy. It depends on how big your business is and what you're asking your bookkeeper to do. My advice is that you have that conversation with them and get whether it's a contract or an engagement letter that really spells out what they're supposed to do for you. And that, again, protects the bookkeeper. so if you start coming to me and saying, hey, I want this report and this report and this report, I can say, no problem. I'd be more than happy to do that for you. But those three extra reports are going to cost you extra. But it also protects the client so that they can come back to the bookkeeper and say, listen, I'm paying you for this, this, and this. Where is that? So I would recommend, you know, that you go and find monthly plans, because then it's flat. It's a flat fee across the board. You know how much it is. There aren't any surprises. Even as the client, if you get behind on giving information to your bookkeeper for them to complete, then you're not going to have a big payment when they finally get caught up. And I've had that happen with some of my hourly guys. It's taken them 3 months. So then we finally get caught up, and then they have a 3 month bill. And it's like, oh my gosh, what is this? Well, it's for October, November, December, because we got behind. If it had been monthly, then they were always getting that taken out. And so that's what I'm surprised when people say, no, I want that month, I want that hourly, because it's really hard to track also. Now, how do you know your bookkeeper's sitting there doing it for 3 hours?
I agree with you, especially for a buy and hold investor. All of my income comes in monthly, and I love everything to be on a monthly. That way, the renters are basically keeping the budget going for me, because as their rent money comes in, then I can pay all of those expenses on a monthly basis. So I happen to like that. I even set my mowing guys and my plowing guys and my property taxes, everything that I do, I have set up on a monthly.
Yep. And I do it, Kathy, to go back to your passive, mine is all ACH. So every month for me, the first of the month is paid, just like you guys, it's payday on the first of the month. I get all my money on the first of the month. But then if you're in Cancun, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to go back to your bookkeeper and say, how come I didn't get November done? And I say, well, you never paid me for October, so I'm not doing November until I get, you know, and you don't want that right now. So that's the other nice part of it, is you can be a lot more passive on it. There's always going to be stuff from your bookkeeper. He's always, you know, you're going to go, and there's always going to be an oddball transaction in there. But there's ways that we can take care of it and still get you some reports and make that easier. But you don't want things to get hosed up because you're not doing your transactions and keeping up with that. And you don't want the payment you don't want payment to be a sticking point, because people get so grumpy about it so quickly. You know, Mike, I'm not doing work because they're cheating me on money. You don't want that.
No, it's kind of how you feel at the end of the day is what's important. Everybody wants to be happy with the partnership and the collaboration. So I get it. Anyway, any other questions? We're coming up on the hour. This has been really a great conversation. I'm going to post again that flow chart for 1099s that I think is going to be very helpful for a lot of our newbies, because that seems to be a big question, like I said, that I've gotten over the last couple of weeks. And then again, this is very helpful for me as I move more into passive, creating it more passive. And the only thing that I'm trying to determine still, I guess, is if there were a percentage of my overall book that I should spend on bookkeeping, or some type of a number, so that I know as I move forward that it's not outside the envelope, that it's what I should be paying for. And again, it depends on what I want the bookkeeper to do. I realize that. So I'll need to
I recommend, just like I was taught way back when I started with the Y, is you get two to three quotes. And most importantly, with those prices, is are you going to enjoy working with that bookkeeper? Are they going to bring that extra value? Do they have that experience? So you might pay a little bit more, but you're going to click with that person. And when you get emails, or when you have to Zoom or phone calls, are you going to enjoy that? Or is it going to, if it's a 9 o'clock call, are you going to be grumpy the rest of the day because you didn't enjoy working? And that's probably more important than yes, obviously the cost and the value, but it's just like anywhere. If you don't, it's like, you got to enjoy working with the people, and it's your business. And if you don't, it's the same way. If I don't enjoy working with my clients, then it's not worth it.
I get it, because the bookkeeper is going to be a major part of your team as you go forward. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so it has to be a team member that you work well with. I get that. Yes, that's perfect conversation.
Kind of a broad general question, if I could, Kathy.
Sure.
So this is our first full year as investment property owners. Last year's taxes, we had 3-4 months of just very early beginnings. So
one property for one, 3 months.
Yeah. So this is the first full year. And obviously, you know, going into that, we weren't thinking small business. We weren't thinking investment for the 9 months prior to actually owning one. So this year we've been a little more focused, well, much more focused on the business, but we still taxes are this big, gray, cloudy mystery to us. So I know you're not a tax accountant, at least not, you know, in the conversation we're having here, but as the bookkeeper, is there anything that you see beginning business people, you know, messing up when it comes to the taxes?
I will speak from personal experience. Yes. I would strongly recommend spending the $25 and reading Profit First. Buy the book because then you make notes, but he recommends in that you're putting away 15 to 20% off the top, your top line revenue. And that's what, and you open up a separate account. He recommends you open up two accounts for your taxes. So you say you use Chase is where your money comes in. You're going to open up another savings account. You make $1,000 in rent. So you're going to put away 20%. So if my math is correct, that's $200. You're going to move it over to your tax account. And what Profit First says is that then you take that $200 and make it even harder for you to go to it throughout the year when times are tough. You're going to move that $200 into another bank. And so I recommend to all my clients that you do the 15 to 20%. And yes, you can sit there and say, wow, Todd, that's a lot of money. It is. But when the tax man cometh and you owe $2,000 and you have $2,400 sitting in that account, it's really easy to write that check. When it's the other way, now you got to come up with the extra $400. And I've been on the owing the $2,400 and owing having $2,000. And I've recently switched it where I owe $2,000. And I have 24 in the account. And it's a lot easier to write that check then. So that's what I tell all my clients is to do that 15 to 20%, put it in there and put it away. Obviously, everybody's different. If you can do 25%, that's even better. The worst that's going to happen is that you're going to have money at the end of the year or at tax time that's left over. So that's what I recommend. Real estate's all kinds of different because of that, but that's the part that I really recommend if you can do that. Profit First by Mike Mallo Whiskey. I have the book somewhere, but you can go on Amazon and type in Profit First. It's an amazing book. It's great for small business owners. It's $25. It would be a great read on the beach in Cancun. He talks to you like, it's like reading a book and he's talking to you. He uses very relevant examples, very new. It's not a boring business book. It's one that you will pick up and really read and finish it off.
Who's the author on that again, Todd?
It's Mike. Hold on a second.
I want to put it in the chat for everyone because, yeah, it sounds like a great read.
The way you spell his last name is M-I-C-H. A-L-O-W-I-C-Z. It's Profit First. I can't get it on the camera. He speaks from example for screwing up his businesses and not having enough money. And so it's not a book where he's talking from up here down to you. He's talking like, listen, I learned the hard way too. So again, I strongly recommend it. One of my real estate clients about a year ago turned me on to it. And when we moved from Columbus to New York, we had to shut everything down in Columbus from Ohio and reopen. And that's the way we have restructured everything with our three businesses in our family. And we started at least the tax part of it last year of putting that 15 to 20%. We did 20%, and the conversation with the CPA has been a lot more enjoyable for us. And around the house, because we don't owe a lot of money. We have the money sitting in our bank. So that's why I'm a strong believer in it.
Now, I do have in my list of accounts where I've got each property in a bank account, I do have a tax account where I do put that amount over, and but it's in the same bank. And I will agree that sometimes it's very tempting when you look there and that starts to add up. And, you know, right before it's time to pay taxes, and especially for those of us that are in real estate, you know. It's kind of like a disease after a while. You see these properties and you're like, oh, I want that one. And all of a sudden, when you start looking for the money, you see that tax account sitting there and you're thinking, that could be my down payment.
Yep. Yeah. So, but anyways, I again, can't recommend that book enough, because I think it's great. And if you don't know what you should be paying yourself, it's a good start from there.
Yeah.
So that's the other part of it. We didn't know what we should be paying ourselves. So.
Great conversation. I really appreciate this. I'm so thankful that you came on with us today, Todd. And again, I will put your information and how to connect with you in the replay as well. And I will send you a link to all of this. And so in case you want to use any of this, if you can use it in part or in whole somehow in any of your marketing, you're welcome to use the replay however you wish. And I'll have it in our mastermind group, so our mastermind members can also see it. And then I'll put our chat in the mastermind as well, so everyone can see what we talked about in the chat and the notes that we took. So any last questions before we go today?
Not here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, glad you guys are home. Good to see you. I know we're only a couple of blocks away from each other, but I get to see you on Zoom more than I get to see you in person. So
very true.
Yes, we'll have to get together for dinner one night soon. So glad you guys are back. Todd, thank you so much. And hopefully we can send some business your way.
I appreciate it. If you have any questions or anybody in your group, I'm more than happy to help, especially I know, Kathy, I didn't give you a solid answer, a real black and white on pricing for bookkeepers. But if someone has a more, hey, I got this quote, I mean, I'm more than happy to help them do that. Okay. for whatever reason, you know.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate that.
No problem. So, have a good one.
Yes, everyone, we'll see you soon. And thank you for joining in today.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye.